Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
On Texas Football, welcome in the Tuesday Night live stream brought to you by Texas Electricity Ratings. And glad to be back. Missed last Tuesday, had a kid's birthday, so we had a nice dinner, but back with you guys and excited to be here talking Texas football. Four practices into spring practice. The pro day is in the books. Also, the coaches clinic is in the books. And we have a lot to talk about Longhorns still with a good bit more of spring practice. We'll preview, talk about it. The decommitment that's come down here today, we'll talk about that. Rules change in the NFL that's come down today in Orlando that could impact some Longhorns to be drafted or to be into the NFL. And we're going to have a good time. It's brought to you by Texas Electricity Ratings. And guys, good to see you. Rod, B, CJ, how we doing?
Doing great, brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's basically, I got football to talk about. There's pads being put on. So that's a beautiful thing. I'm not in a bad mood when we're talking ball.
You're right about that. Four practices in. And CJ, you were at the open media window and availability on Monday, the second padded practice down at DKR. What were your takeaways from what your eyeballs told you and then what Sark had to say?
Yeah, it was a clean, crisp practice. And I like the sound of that. You know, watching it, there wasn't much repetition of drills. There wasn't many balls hitting the ground. For the most part, yes, coaches were still getting on their guys, but it wasn't for – errors or mistakes. It was to coach them up and ensure that they're taking the next steps in their development. That's really encouraging to me because the less time you have to spend kind of repeating drills and kind of going through and fixing, correcting, and making sure things are done right, the more you can sit in there and you know, progress. Rod, I'm sure you'd love to have, during practice, get to, you know, in and out of drills as quickly as you can so you can get further down the line and get into the fun things, you know, faster into one-on-ones or half field or seven-on-seven, whatever it was, rather than what it was like going through the weaves and cone drills, having to redo that all day long. Texas doesn't have a whole lot of that right now. There's a lot of elder statesmen in the room. There's a leader at each position that you can point to. And again, there's a lot of talent on this roster right now. I don't want to say this team's going to be better than 2023, but there's certainly going to be as much talent roaming the field next fall, and that's certainly encouraging, especially when you have four or five offensive linemen returning and a quarterback right now that's, you know, kind of projected to go atop of the next draft next fall or next spring.
Yeah, Sark multiple times has referenced the fact that he doesn't have to coach the basics of the culture anymore, even the basics of their methods, how they practice. The level of intensity that's expected. He has even told a story about how he implied that basically someone tackled someone wrong at practice, probably brought him all the way down to the ground, whatever it was. You don't do that in practice. And he talked about how the players, they're the ones who came to police and the situation. They're the ones who came and said, whoa, that's not how we do things, man. This is how we do things. And everybody came to the side to correct the young man. Even before Sark got a chance to go over there, that is gonna, I mean, right now, that for Sark is probably for him one of his proudest moments as a coach. When you see the guys who have now established within the culture and they know the culture so well that they understand the values of that culture, they understand the requirements, they understand the criteria, they understand what is required, right? And it's that's when you start to have a player-led team. A team that now the coaches can really just focus on game planning. Sark doesn't have to focus on, you know, maintaining and cultivating the culture as much. Still got to do some things as a coach, but as much because the players now have taken ownership of it. It's ours now. We own this culture. This is our culture. It ain't something the same. But remember the players who left Texas and they were, I'm not even going to get into it, deep into it, but the player from Lake Travis who was being recruited by Texas, some of the older Texas players didn't like it who had left Texas. Whether we'll get into the morality of it, that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the players that left still felt ownership of the culture. And they were criticizing a player that was being recruited by Texas, but they still felt like that was ownership of the culture there, even though they're moving on to the NFL. So is what Sark is building, it has some of those deep, you know, familial kind of threads to it with this culture. And that's what you want. You want the players now to say, no, this is our culture. And then they take ownership of it. That's the player led team.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, instead of wondering why they're doing it now, not only don't know what to do, they know why they're doing it. And that's how you police it. Right. I mean, they know why this is important, how to tackle, how to do things the important way. It's like when you go from renting a house to buying a house, right? You own it now. And yep. You want it to become an asset, and you're going to protect it more than you would a rental car versus your own car, for sure. I do like the way that Sark and CJ, you were there for the availability. You know, Sark talking about what he's seen from his team so far. We'll get into the whole thermostat, you know, conversation about bringing the intensity every practice. But, you know, he said, I think we have a great looking team. I think we have really good length, even at our skill spots, good length. We've got good speed. I think we have good size internally. I think we've got quarterbacks that can make the throws necessary. I think we've got versatile players at positions where you need versatility, whether it's tight end, linebacker, safety, or star. The runners are all versatile. They can catch, run with speed. They can run with power. Saying he likes the way his team looks. Remember last year on the Pivot podcast with Ryan Clark and those guys, he talked about it's now starting to sound and look like his team. CJ's taking this a step further now, saying he really likes the way they look on the hoof on the field. And if they're doing things properly, good things come when you've got that kind of talent, that kind of depth, and that kind of versatility on your football team.
Yeah, it's interesting. And it's funny because you can go back, and we talked about this on the winning drive the other day, Rod, but you can go back to one of Sarkisian's biggest mentors and role models in the world of coaching, Pete Carroll, and kind of see where the similarities in roster construction and kind of tendencies he likes to use at each position really start coming into play with this roster construction and the way that it really starts to feel like it is quote-unquote Sarkisian's team. You know, he mentioned that last year with the speed at receiver, the playmakers at running back, and then you have the big boys up front. Obviously, the trenches were what really rocking. You had a big body out wide with Ryan Watts in the secondary. The lengthy DBs are what you like to see in the secondary. That's what Seattle made very famous back in the day with the Legion of Boom. And then you flip the ball over to the offensive side of Seattle, and what do you got? Well, you got a sleek, slender, skilled guy with Tyler Lockett. You got a big fella that can really, really run with DK Metcalf. And, hey, you got really talented guys as well. You talk about Marquise Goodwin being a part of that Seahawks roster, them picking him up in free agency a year ago while also spending a draft pick on Jackson Smith and Jigba. And you start piecing it together where Sarkisian got, you know, some of his tendencies from. It was Pete Carroll, you know, and I think you can really see that this year with Texas obviously going out and adding their pieces to the offensive side of the ball, whether it be Isaiah Bond, Matthew Golden, Amari Nye Black, but also in the secondary. You go get Andrew Makuba. You add Kobe Black and Wardell Mack from the recruiting side of things, guys that can really, really play football with great length. And so the tendencies and the similarities you can see kind of trickle down. So when Sarkisian says it's starting to look like my team, those tendencies at each position group, you can look at and say, absolutely. Sarkisian likes the big boys up front. He likes fast guys out wide, and he likes length in his secondary. And we're starting to see that all around the offense and defense right now, especially during these media availabilities.
Yeah, I think the coaches have, you know, come to the conclusion, and I think it's an accurate one, that you gotta recruit things that you can't coach, right? You can't coach speed, you can't coach length, you can't coach size, big humans, right? Versatility is one of those things. I think it's tough to coach that in guys. It's either innate or you program it early in players. So I think Sark has learned, listen, we can develop a lot of talent. We have really good coaches, so they have a lot of confidence in their ability to develop talent. What they need to do out there is bring in certain traits at specific positions that fit the blueprint of the brand of football that they want to play. And you just said speed on the outside, size in the trenches, versatility in the back seven. I'll go even further and say back seven because of the way they want to use Anthony Hill, which Sark also talked about, that they want to use him as a versatile chess piece, that his versatility is an asset. Sark, I'm telling you, the buzzword is versatility for Sark this offseason, man. He's been talking about it a lot. He brought it up a bunch when he was describing his secondary, the guys that he recruited, five of them in this latest recruiting class, versatility, position flex, three position players. Talked about it a ton, describing those guys. And in the latest media availability, my man CJ asked him about cornerback depth. What did he say, CJ? Are we cross-training all them guys? We got the cornerbacks playing safety, safety's playing corner. And what have I been saying for the last, you know, month or so? Texas got to get more versatile in their secondary, in their back seven. They have to. That is, and honestly, go look at the reinvention of DBU, guys. That was the key to it. Like 60% of the guys that played in the NFL that came from Texas that played in the secondary or were undrafted free agents, they all played multiple positions at Texas or in the NFL. That versatility, it offers defensive coordinated solutions to potential problems that the defense is going to present to them when they try to find a matchup a disadvantage for you on defense, and when they try to find the coverage liability by going extreme sets like 3-by-1 formation, and you got to have your whatever your weakest safety and coverage is, they can isolate that guy. Well, you can't really do that when you got all great coverage specialists who are all versatile defenders. Sark likes to run compressed, condensed sets, bring the safeties and the corners close to the line of scrimmage, make them run force defenders. Well, if you got versatile defenders who really can tackle really well and are actually good force run defenders, then that's not a problem. Then that's not they're not at a matchup disadvantage when formationally teams try to put them in a situation, a binding situation, right? So that's the thing. I mean, that's why I think he's going versatile. It's not a coincidence that he keeps throwing that term out there and that they're cross-training those DBs, guys. That's on purpose. He understands what he tries to do to defenses, and now build your defense with possible solutions that could defend the matchups that you try to engineer. And those matchups that you actually, as a coach, formationally and with personnel groups, try to take advantage of and exploit. So build your defense to try to defend, I think, whatever your best assets are as an offensive coordinator, because he is one of the best in college football.
Yep. Rod, I want to ask you about that Anthony Hill conversation here as we're talking Texas defense, length, and speed. Let me tell you about Texas electricity ratings, though. If you live here in the Lone Star State in the major cities, with deregulated electricity. Dallas and Houston, of course, jump to mind. You understand that the deregulated electricity market can be confusing, can be a big advantage, but at the same time, it can also be confusing as heck. So Texas Electricity Ratings is a shopping website that lets you compare prices, read customer reviews, and find good electricity that fits your needs specifically. Also filters out a lot of the gimmicky plans on websites like Power to Choose or others that aren't going to lead you in the right direction. They trick customers actually into expensive bills that you don't want to lock into. So if you're in the market for new electricity plan, shop TexasElectricityRatings.com. That's TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF on Texas football, OTF for all of your electricity needs. If you're in Dallas or Houston or any deregulated area of Texas, here on the On Texas Football live stream on a Tuesday, brought to you by TER, Texas Electricity Ratings. /OTF. Rod, you mentioned Anthony Hill, and I did hear Sark's comment about how Anthony Hill, ideally, if he had to start today, he'd probably play middle linebacker, but David Bend is apparently having a real good camp, and Leona Lafau and some of these other guys coming on. In your mind, as the football theorist and defensive expert, in his perfect world, how would Sark like to use Anthony Hill in 2024?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, yeah, that's good. I think ideally you want to use him situationally on the edge. You don't want to take that away. I think he is going to be, he's your middle linebacker. The problem with that is if he stays just at middle linebacker too often, I do believe teams will be able to take advantage of him as a run defender, because I don't necessarily think right now he is an elite run defender. He's already, as a guy coming off the edge, one of your best pass rushers. Sark said he was top two best pass rushers last season. So you don't want to lose that. So I would just have him as a movable chess piece. And I would have him, depending on the situation, we could be up big in a game. That may change how I use him. We could be playing against a team that likes to run a lot of power, that wants to run, a lot of, gap schemes and wants to run power football right at you. That may change how I use him in the games at times, depending on the opposing team's offensive line, how good they are in terms of being able to get to the second level. That would change how I use him, because I don't want to waste him as an asset and as a weapon, having one of our strengths go up against another team's strength. So if they got a really good O-line, I would find the weakness in that offensive line. If it's on the edge, I'd use him on the edge. If it's the interior offensive lineman, then we're talking about interior blitzes, where I would have him twist and stunts up front and have him end up going up one-on-one with one of their weakest pass defenders, depending on the situation. So I really would showcase his ability. Now, that's tough to do because you need stabilizing forces around him. So you do need two other off-ball linebackers, right, who are capable and consistent. And because if you don't have that, then you need him to be the stabilizing force at the off-ball linebacker, and you can't necessarily be moving him around. So you are rooting for David Bender and rooting for Leung Lafau to give you other possible starters at that position. And that way you're not pigeonholed in terms of how you can use them. You can put them on the edge. You can run a 3-3-5 if you want to and do something funky with him as an edge defender. You could, a lot of situations where you put him in a situation where he can run twists and stunts and be an interior blitzer or an interior rusher and putting pressure on the opposing team. And have a guy like, Leung Lafau can drop back in coverage because he's got that kind of ability. Or you can trust that David Bender, if you have him on the edge, can still be the stabilizing force against the run inside. So you need to have to utilize and weaponize him. You're going to need viable options at linebacker. And that's why it's really important how Leung Lafau and David Bender, Blackshear, and those other linebackers look. Because if you don't get capable play out of those guys, then you can't use Anthony Hill in the Michael Parsons like fashion that you want to.
It's interesting. And that's Johnny Nansen, CJ, the new linebackers coach, trying to develop that depth and find pieces. And at the same time, you have, better edge players, right? If we're talking about the coverage versatility in the back end, Sark singled out Trey Moore as a guy that's come in as a real mature guy, gets it. Trey Moore is an interesting case study out of UTSA. We've talked about it, but from Smithson Valley and, didn't blow up until his junior into his senior year. And then that's the COVID year and he doesn't get kind of the recruiting love that it took and, couldn't take visits or go to camps and all that. But I think he showed you at UTSA, he can be a real baller with the ability to be a natural pass rusher. Now he's here and bringing that. Then you hear Sark talk about Colton Bosick and Ethan Burke and we know Colin Simmons. There's a lot of riches there on the edges. And then, as Raja said, you add an Anthony Hill to that in a specialized way. If you're covering better in the back end and you're able to be still good against the run, this can be a defense that wreaks havoc on offenses.
Yeah, and that's going to be the key point is, can you stop the run? That was the staple of the 2023 defense, obviously highlighted by Tavondre Sweat, who won the award for the best interior defensive lineman in the entire country and a first rounder. So how do you replace that? Well, you have a lot of athleticism, especially on the edges and with Anthony Hill. Making sure that you put your guys in a position to use their athleticism, I think, is going to be key. And even with that group right now on the defensive line, there's a good amount of athleticism in there. Alfred Collins, by all accounts, 6'6", can really move. His interception against Colorado his freshman year, I think a lot of folks looked at that and thought, oh, my goodness, like this guy's going to be – one heck of a football player, and he had a great 2023 season. He was behind, obviously, the two guys I mentioned earlier, but he was your third best defensive lineman a year ago. Now an extended role with an extended snap count. Can you see that consistency built throughout the duration of a game when you're asked to play 40 to 50 snaps? That's going to be the biggest question for him and Vernon Broughton, because they've been, you know, great contributors in the past, but the weight of that entire interior defense has not been necessarily on their shoulders so far in their career. It's funny, you mentioned Trey Moore earlier, and I actually saw him walking around the street on the way to the pro day last week. He doesn't look like a guy that has 22 and a half sacks over the last 2 years. You know, that's, he just doesn't have that frame. And it's interesting because then you see him in pads, and with that room specifically and the way that it's kind of molded and changed over the last 2 years, now you've got some real length there. You know, Zeno Umeozulu coming in, Colton Vosick back on the field, Ethan Burke. You know, these are your guys that, you know, certainly look the part. You talk about the first guys off the bus. Those are three guys you'd like to have off the bus, plus Baron Sorrell. What Trey Moore does is his ball get off is superb. And I think one of the things that really stands out when I watch him in drills is there's so much quickness and bend with him. It doesn't matter almost that he doesn't have the longest arms, that he doesn't have the biggest frame. He can kind of contort his way around that outside edge of the tackle in ways other guys on that team cannot at the moment. And so you're going to see him on the field often. I think he's going to lead the team in sacks in 2024. But the question becomes, what else can he provide for you defensively if he's not getting to the quarterback? And that's where this Texas defensive edge room can really take the next snap. If they're not getting to the quarterback, can they bat balls down at the line of scrimmage? Can they be pluses in the running game? Again, you don't have two guys – really three guys from a year ago, if you add Terrell Carter in, that were really staples of your, you know, top 20, top 10 run defense in the entire country. So that's going to be the question mark for me. But right now, the edges should certainly be a strength from what it was a year ago.
Good stuff right there. Guys, before we get to the NFL conversation and the rules change today that could impact some Longhorns in the draft coming up and certainly on roster construction next year, Rod, I wanted to ask you about the thermostat conversation, which Sark uses, right? And he, you know, now that he talks about, you know, I just like the way my team looks and they look the part. We're, you know, great looking team. Now it's about focus and you know, intentionality on every practice and replacing that leadership that's moving off to the NFL. And, you know, specifically looking for practice by practice intensity. He did use the analogy of the thermostat and thermometers, like, you know, thermostat set the temperature while thermometers merely measure it. We need thermostats on the field. And I thought it was interesting that two of the first names he mentioned were running back C.J. Baxter and Jaden Blue. And that doesn't surprise you, but at the same time, what is it that Shashard Joyce is doing? Because it was Bijan and Rojo, and then last year it was Jonathan Brooks. Now you're hearing C.J. Baxter and Jaden Blue. Pretty clearly, Shashard Joyce is impacting that running back room, that they're bringing not just, you know, their skills, they're bringing leadership out of that room.
Yeah, that's a great point. And not only that, you know, he mentioned Trey Wisner.
Yeah.
He threw out a Trey Wisner shout out, which, and I think that to me was the most surprising of all those guys in terms of the players he mentioned that were, you know, setting the tone at practice. So he mentioned three running backs to talk about the culture of that room. I would put the Texas running back room culture overall up against any position room of any team in the country. I think it's that good. And by the way, it started before Tashard Choice. Tashard Choice has been amazing, but Stan Drayton had that room right. Stan Drayton did a great job. That's why he ended up getting a head coaching job. And what I love about it, and Sark talked about this, you know, I remember when Keontae Ingram was the starting running back for Texas. Keontae Ingram has his job taken by Rojo. He transfers. He's drafted into the NFL, though, when he's after he transfers, what, to USC? Was it USC, I believe?
Yeah.
And then Rojo is the starting running back. Rojo has his job taken by Bijan. And both of those guys end up getting drafted. And then Jonathan Brooks ends up being starting. I take that back. C.J. Baxter ends up winning the starting job as a freshman, has his job taken by Jonathan Brooks, who ends up as the Doker Ward kind of, you know, basically front runner until he ends up getting hurt. And he's going to end up getting drafted. And then now C.J. Baxter and Jaden Blue are going to be the two frontline running backs. You see the cultures that's developing there, where you can have a guy that's an NFL running back have his job taken in that room. Like, that's it, guys. That's it. That's the goal of every position group at the University of Texas. That's it. That's your – and we had it in the DB room at Texas at one point. I remember when my man Ahmad Brooks was starting at corner – Then I come in, I take that job along with Quentin Jammer, who moves from safety to corner, and then he takes the other corner spot. My man Ahmad Brooks ends up at the safety spot. He ends up getting back on the field, earning a job at another spot. He's like, now cornerback is too loaded. I'm gonna go to safety. I see if I can take one of those spots. He ends up starting at safety and getting drafted. He's an undrafted free agent, end up making an NFL roster. So you get, like, that's the culture that we had, though, in that room where now you can have your job taken. Still don't mean you're not a really good player, but that's how many good players that we had on that roster at the time. And I think the running back room at Texas, that it is the ideal culture for every position group, man. They're so loaded and they're so unselfish as a group that, you know, guy has his job taken. That's all right. You know, that guy's just a better player. It doesn't mean I'm not going to make it to the NFL. And they're right. They're still going to the league. And with the running back position being devalued at this point, and it took a little bit, it got a little bit of a bump with the recent free agency signings at running back in the NFL, but it's been devalued for the most part as a non-premium position. And yet Texas has sent two running backs to the combine the last 2 years, and they're having running backs drafted, multiple running backs, and going to have one draft this year who was hurt at the end of the year. I mean, Texas is doing something special in this running back room. And you're right, Tashard Choice is a huge part of it.
Yeah, hey, the best part of that, Rod, is there's no animosity towards one another. You know, you talk about taking your job. Guess who the first guys are off the bench to go give each other high fives when a running back scores? It's the other running backs. I look back to the Texas Tech game when Trey Weisinger found the end zone. He was met basically in the end zone by two guys on the bench, which were Jonathan Brooks, C.J. Baxter, Jaden Blue. So it's one of those things where the healthy competition breeds success in the room, which ultimately leads to more success on the field. And if you look at one room that really has things going, it's that one, and it's the offensive line.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, the O-line. I agree with that. We'll get to the O-line because they're pushing one another, and there's finally big-time depth there. I would say to the Jonathan Brooks conversation, the other part to everything you guys just said, you know, none of them are transferring. I know there's the transfer, the NIL now, but you know, to Rod's point, I mean, you lose your job as a big-time running back, and, you know, Bijan Robinson's coming in, you're leaving these day and age, right? And they're not moving on. They're staying. And now there's, you know, two more, you know, top end running backs rolling in here, Christian Clark and Jarrett Gibson, who want to be a part of that running back room. So safe to say it's very healthy. One note on Jonathan Brooks. I saw this quote today, or actually earlier in the week, from Stephen Jones, the Cowboys executive vice president. Cowboys, of course, a lot of news today, but he was asked about Jonathan Brooks. And he said this quote, this is Stephen Jones, because everybody's kind of penciled in, you know, Jonathan Brooks maybe to that second round pick for the Cowboys. And Stephen Jones said, it always helps when one of the doctors you're very familiar with does the surgery. That'll be very helpful. Obviously, he's a guy we follow right in our backyard at Texas. He got still sets. And if it wasn't for the injury, he might be ultimately rated as the best back in the draft. Of course, the team physician in Dallas, Dr. Dan Cooper, did the surgery. He's doing the checkups on the injury when he comes back to get it evaluated. And then according to Stephen Jones, our understanding is that he has a great chance to be ready to not miss anything, start of training camp and go to work. We'll see. I don't want to preempt anything, but, you know, they're pretty clear that Stephen Jones is keeping tabs on it. They're pretty high. There it is right there. High on Jonathan Brooks, which I have to think, guys, that culture we're talking about aids in the conversation, that these guys come in ready to compete in the National Football League and be good team players, and the Cowboys certainly need a running back of that skill set.
Yeah, no, man, the Cowboys, listen, the draft is the only way the Cowboys are going to fill these holes on their roster because they ain't doing a damn thing in free agency right now. So I don't know. this is the weirdest offseason for the Cowboys. And y'all just saw the story about what Jerry Jones said about Dak and Ian Rappaport's reporting. They're willing to let Dak play out the last year on his contract and potentially become a free agent. And you have a lame duck coach with Mike McCarthy on 1 year deal. Mike Zimmer signed a 1 year deal. They haven't signed CeeDee Lamb yet. They picked up Micah's fifth year option. I think everybody is on a contract year with the Dallas Cowboys, man. It's wild what's going on. It's pretty crazy. Yeah.
Hey, it's finally, either go make a playoff run or we're moving on. And I think right now, for as much flack as, you know, the Joneses get for the Cowboys, and hate to turn this into a Cowboys deal, but, you know, they're basically saying, go show me something or else we're going to find somebody else to do it. And, hey, there's some really talented quarterbacks coming out next year. We talked about it a little bit earlier with Shedeur Sanders, Quinn Ewers, Carson Beck, Jackson Dart, Riley Leonard. Might be time. It might be time in Dallas.
Well, and Deion's already out saying that Shedeur is going to, you know,
oh, you mean Jay gonna draft Shedeur? Oh, that'd be wild.
Or Dion's going to kind of force him to Dallas, you know what I'm saying? You know, make sure he ends up there. And then yeah, Dion will follow right in there to Dallas. See,
that is a great theory, E. I would give you props on that one. That is brilliant, brother.
He's already set the table. He's already set the table for that, man. Shedeur ain't just going anywhere, y'all, just so you know.
That is brilliant.
Cowboys might be the quarterback.
That's such a Jerry Jones thing to do. That'd be such a Jerry Jones thing. I love it.
He's looking that far down the road. We'll see. Of course, I had Deion as a player back in the day, that big free agent, and won a Super Bowl. What a storyline that would be. That would be the ultimate Cowboys story. All right, guys. And we hope the best for Jonathan Brooks. Good to hear that his recovery is going good. I mean, that's big news that according to Stephen Jones, the team doctor, saying, hey, look, man, he looks like he's ready to go 100% come July into August. That's great news for Jonathan Brooks. Hey, guys, on the NFL, let's switch gears a little bit to this NFL rule that came down today. This is all coming out because they're all in Orlando for the owners' meetings. And all this news is breaking, but boy, some rules changes, the hip drop tackles ban, they'll be able to challenge a roughing the passer call now, which I like a lot, but also the kickoff rule, which gosh, a month ago, Adam Schefter was reporting didn't have support. Now it gets approved 29-3 where, you know, I think we've all seen the videos now, the kicker kicks off, the coverage team and the receiving team are lined up 10 yards apart. None of them can move until the receiver catches the ball, and then they all go into action. Very interesting to me because, Rod, you played on special teams in the NFL. I mean, this changes a lot. It makes the play more exciting. But really the strategies and creativity that come from it from special teams coaches, you know, who do you put on the field? Because when I watch those plays, Rod, in the XFL, it's almost like a DB trying to play press coverage on a receiver because you're right there, you know, 10 yards out, and you're trying to press the guy. You're not really blocking him. And just like the receiver's trying to get off the block, I mean, what type of bodies are you putting out there to block, and what type of bodies are you putting out there to tackle? And then, of course, the receiver or the kick returner is just looking for some space. They're just looking for an edge. So it doesn't, you know, you could put big guys back there. You put running backs back there. You put receivers back there. That's, to me, is pretty fascinating of how not just what it's going to look like, but how special teams coaches coach it and deploy their troops.
Yeah, it opens back up the creativity, I think, for the kickoff return. And now, because you have decreased the violence in the play, right? It was the most violent play in football, even with the touchbacks, guys. The touchback rate was upwards of 70%. I mean, there were no kickoff returns in the NFL anyway. Nobody's returning them anyway. The XFL kickoff return rate is upwards of 90%. And the NFL is going to incentivize teams because they're going to move the touchback. Now a touchback, I believe brings teams out to the 30 instead of 25. So you got basically there's more incentive. But I think I think that you're still going to see teams kick it through the back of the end zone. When teams start getting creative, because they have no idea how creative these special teams coaches are going to get. When teams start getting creative, like you said, about the personnel they're going to use, because you got to really, let's say you had a really agile offensive lineman, one that can really move. I'm talking about one of them big men that can move. Like, what's the big dude from Penei Sewell?
Yeah,
Detroit. Sure. Man, you put him out there. You got you remember the teams that got fullbacks, big guys that can actually block. They're gonna have a huge advantage in these types of situations. So I'm with you. I think the personnel is going to teams will get creative with the personnel they use. They get creative with the strategy a little bit, and you've decreased the violence in the play. So now you're gonna have back to the old school days when you had elite Hall of Fame athletes being thrown back there on kickoff return every now and then. Randy Moss will go back there. You talk about Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders will be back there returning kicks. Like, you had elite athletes returning kicks back in the day. Well, when teams started looking at the injury rate, high-speed collisions, car crashes happening on special teams, and giving somebody a 40-yard running start to become a missile and launch themselves into your $20 million receiver, they went, nah, no thanks. I'm not putting my dude back there. And that's when teams started just de-emphasizing the kickoff return, and it basically got shadow banned in the NFL. It got neutered. Well, the NFL, they don't like moot plays. They don't like wasted plays. They try to infuse drama in every damn play. All right, that's why people thought they was going to ban the tush push, because the tush push, it was not any drama, right? They were converting like 75% of them damn things. It's like, there's no drama. So they thought, hey, the NFL is all about, it's a TV show, number one TV TV show in America, because they're all about infusing drama in every play. And that was a wasted play. So now you got drama back into it. I think you're going to see elite athletes like Tyreek Hill back there every now and then for Miami. You're going to see speed. And you're going to see, I don't know if it'll be sure Derrick Henry's back there, but you'll see some of the best athletes on the teams like thrown back there in those situations. And I think it was a win. That's a win for the NFL. It's a one-year experiment. But Keelan Robinson, I said this a week ago, 2 weeks ago. I said actually at the combine, I said, man, Keelan Robinson should pray that they change that rule before the draft, because he's the best kickoff returner in his draft class. And if they change the rule for this draft, that's some special teams coach is going to walk into his GM's office and go, hey, man, I need this guy. Can you priority free agent? Can we get this guy? I need him right now. He's going to be high up now, higher up on a lot of teams' boards, because they're about to emphasize and prioritize kickoff return. And, you know, like I said, they took the violence out of it, man. That's the whole – that was the initial, I think, win. But the bigger win, I think, is going to be the explosive and exciting plays they're about to have on special teams kickoff returns again.
Well, I agree, Rod.
Yeah, Keelan Robinson actually went to Twitter to say, hey, this new rule change is something I'm a fan of. Yeah, here it is. Thank you, Matthew. Bro. I like the rule changes, as you should, because Rod, I think you and I have the same wavelength here. This is going to help him a ton. Yeah. And for someone who watches a ton of football, I'm excited for it, because it just means more action, more opportunity, more chances for big plays, highlight real plays. I'm a fan of that. I hope most of y'all are as well. But the creativeness and where the game evolves in the kickoff is where I'm really – really interested. You know who should be on the first call? Just about every team in the NFL right now when it comes to special teams and rule changes and how to take advantage of that. It's Bill Belichick. Every coach in the league should be saying, how can I get you on my staff? Because no one has figured out special teams better than him and understanding what it's like to keep guys in the NFL. We saw Matthew Slater like get Hall of Fame almost hype when he retired because of solely special teams. You know, they find guys in New England. Brendan Schooler's been the latest. That's, you know, drawn all pro praise almost solely by special teams. So when you look at the Texas Longhorns in the NFL right now, that this really impacts, yes, we've talked about Keelan Robinson as a returner. Devin Duvernay down in Jacksonville now, this impacts him. Andrew Beck, Justin Yarbrough just mentioned it earlier. He actually had a kickoff return this year against Jacksonville as a Houston Texan. What it means for him is this is going to be a guy that you see probably right in the dead middle of this return team, because he is athletic. He can block and he can move in space. That's a big one. Brendan Schooler, of course, the other one. So it's really interesting. And, of course, the kickers, Cameron Dicker, Justin Tucker. How does this impact them as guys that, you know, use – the kickoff is something to show off their leg in a way. It'll be interesting. But if you look at creativeness and ways that the game evolves, Bill Belichick needs to be an analyst, an advisor. He's got to be something for a lot of teams right now, because that's the best brain in the game's ever seen. They should certainly – yeah. Hey, by the way, Cordarrelle Patterson, not many people are going to agree with me here, the best kickoff returner of all time. He is that guy. So great signing by the Steelers, by the way. Great.
No, that's not crazy. I believe he's got the record of kickoff returns for touchdowns in the NFL, if I'm not mistaken. I think
he's that hybrid player. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what I would do. I know we're not getting deep into this thing. Go do research, NFL coaches. Go find out who was the best team at the XFL kickoff return. Go find their special teams coach and go bring them on as a consultant right now.
It does upset me a little bit that you won't see, you know, the surprise onside kicks anymore. And what does this mean for squib kicks? I know that wasn't ever really a big part of the game, but, you know, there were some interesting moments on squib kicks. What was the big man for New England that almost housed a 90-yard return on a squib? You know what I'm talking about? Like, freaky looks off of squib kicks at times. And so that's unfortunate that I think that's going to be out of the game now, as are some of these, you know, surprise kicks. You look back at, was it the Clemson-Alabama game where you had the little pooch onside kick to begin the second half? Shoot, even Darren Sharper, or was it Darren Harper? Who was the Saints guy in the Super Bowl against the Colts?
Surprise onside?
Yep.
Yeah, you can't do that anymore. You got to declare an onside now. So you're no sneak attacks. no sneak attacks. This eliminates that, and that's obviously the downside of it. But I think more upside. Great comments by you guys. I love that XFL coach. And, you know, it's going to be a whole new frontier, and it's going to be a play people watch now. And you mentioned it, Rod. Hall of Famers were back there. Rod Woodson and Derek and Deion.
Man.
You're going to. I mean, especially if you're trailing in a game and you need field position and you need to play. And, I mean, you're going to call up your big one. I mean, gosh, I think of Bijan Robinson. I'm like, who? Yeah. I mean, that guy's got the speed, the elusiveness, power. That's a problem, returning a kick. I mean, what do you not want with Bijan Robinson? Space. I mean, and that's what he's going to get back there. Those are the kind of guys. I would also say Xavier Worthy. I mean, Xavier Worthy's 4-2-1.
Agreed.
I mean, and now he's not going to risk getting blown up. You know, it's not that 160-pounder is going to get smashed by some guy. He can get a full head of steam, find a seam, and it's Katie bar the door. I think Xavier Worthy's stock goes up, not just as a receiver, but as a return man with this, in addition to Keelan Robinson. Yeah, it's just, I mean, find the, and you're right, Rod. I mean, I think every NFL specialties coach should be, well, go back and watch every XFL kickoff.
Yep.
Exactly. Trying to figure out what worked, what didn't, how to deploy it. Because I saw some end arounds. I saw some all kinds of reverses going. So all you're looking for is a seam, man.
That's all you got to find.
Yeah. And I love your idea of offensive linemen or big fullbacks that are out there lead blocking. I mean, you run an end around and get a pulling guy that's got, you know, blocks 4 or 5 guys. Look out.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Because you need to flip the numbers advantage depending on, because I don't know if they're going to have one guy deep or two guys deep. But I'm assuming that the kicking team, they're going to have a numbers advantage because only their kicker, they'll have 10 guys that are covering the kick. The kicker will be kicking. Nobody can move until the ball is caught by the receiver. But I'm just trying to think about the numbers advantage. And if I got a Penei Sewell out there who is used to getting out there on the edge, blocking one guy, knocking him off, and then hitting another dude, that's what I need. I need people that can basically block multiple guys. And that's your fullbacks. That's your tight ends, and a really, really elite, agile offensive lineman is what I'm thinking about. So, I think now, it's going to be really fun to see the personnel they put out there, because every team is going to look at it different. Some teams are like, you know what, linebackers and tight ends are ideal in this situation. Bigger bodies, but guys that can move. But I think, honestly, bigger bodies that can move, which means O-linemen. Ain't no fullbacks left in the league, but there are a few teams that have some, and they're ideal for this particular situation.
All right. Now, Jordan Whittington's a great blocker and can return. I mean, he's another guy that might be helping us too. We'll see where that goes. I mean, that is voted in today, 29-3, and we'll keep an eye on how that impacts the specialty teams. All right, guys, the On Texas Football Tuesday live stream brought to you by Texas Electricity Ratings, and we are rolling on. We also want to tell you, we'll tell you about TER coming up and Texas Electricity Ratings, but Rod, do you have the other sponsor tonight, or do you want me to read that?
I'm happy to read that. I can take care of it here. Here we go. Let's get into our other sponsor. And shout out to our friends. All right, everybody, we're in the thick of March, which means the tournament is upon us and spring football is here. Now, let's be real. How many hours do you spend watching, reading, and listening to our coverage of the Longhorns? Well, think about that for a second and then ask yourself, what if there was a way to get rewarded for doing it? I mean, there are hundreds of credit card and airline points programs, but what if there was one where you got points for showing your Longhorn fandom for your Texas fandom? Now let's take it a step further. What if those points you earned for being a fan unlock rewards like $16 tickets to the biggest games on the schedule? Yes, $16, folks. Yeah, we're talking about every bang for your buck. So if that sounds even remotely appealing, then you have to join us on the Autograph app, folks. The Autograph app, the Texas community on the Autograph app has all of your favorite Longhorn coverage, including ours, all in one place, making it easier than ever to stay on top of everything. Plus, each time you read, watch, listen, and share your favorite content on the app, you earn fan coins, which can be used to unlock exclusive rewards at prices not found anywhere else, like $16 tickets to some of the biggest college basketball games this season. So scan to download the free Autograph app in the Apple Store. Also, you can use the referral code On Texas. That's On Texas. That referral code is On Texas. Join us and see where your fandom takes you. That is the Autograph app in the Apple App Store. And use the referral code On Texas. There you go. Thank you for the Autograph app, folks out there. We appreciate
Autograph app. That's great stuff right there. All right. As we switch gears here, we'll get back to some of the Texas four practices in conversation. Good NFL stuff right there. Hey, CJ, a decommitment today that has come down that it sounded like we were in our pre-talk and pre-coverage you weren't real surprised about.
Yeah, Adrian Wilson out of Pflugerville Weiss actually decommitted earlier today from Oregon. It's one that, although he is a native guy to Austin, you know, he's just about 25 minutes north of campus in Pflugerville. Texas won't have a lot of interest there. I was by the school last month, kind of kicking around, seeing, you know, if Texas would reengage a little bit. Texas never offered. Texas never pushed. I don't think that will be the case again. This is the second decommitment. Previously, originally committed to TCU before flipping to Oregon, now back on the market. I'm sure he'll be looking to stick closer to home, but I don't think Texas is going to mess around with Adrian Wilson at the moment. They've got their guys on their board right now, whether it be Keltron Johnson, Kalik Lockett, DeCorian Moore, Jamie French. Those are kind of the guys right now at the very top of the Texas board, with, you know, guys like Andrew Marsh, who was on campus this past weekend, and even Daylon McCutcheon out of Lovejoy, a guy that they're looking at a little harder right now. So a decommitment from Oregon, but one that won't have a lot of impact from Texas.
I go back to that Jeff Banks quote that he had on signing day. Is that if there is a really good player out there that we're recruiting, but we're not offering, he said it's probably because we didn't see the signs. We're looking for signs. And yep, they're just signs, basically signs that they are a fit for Texas, signs that they are a fit for the Texas culture. Doesn't mean that he's not a good player. All these guys are good players. Doesn't mean that he's not a good young man. Doesn't mean that he doesn't have a great personality, that he doesn't have good character. None of that. It's about the fit for Texas, whether their character is a fit for the Texas football program, whether their skill set is a fit for Texas, whether their personality is a fit for Texas. They're looking for the signs of respect, signs that they these guys will fit into the Texas program, signs that these guys have the maturity, all those things, right? So they're just different signs. And if they don't offer them, it's because they didn't see the signs that they would be a right fit at Texas. That's all.
CJ, I had a selfish question to you. Do you – The kids that from Atascocita that set the American record in the 4x1 in Duncanville, I know there some of them are football players. Has Texas recruited any of those guys that are blazing American records? Those guys are unbelievable.
Yeah, how crazy was that? What was it, 38.92, I think. So, I mean, that's beating most colleges, you know. That's remarkable. Jelani Watkins is one that Texas messed around with a little bit in the 2024 cycle. He committed to LSU for track and a little bit of football as well. So he's really the only one of that bunch to keep an eye on, obviously. LSU doing some real damage with not only Atascocita, but Duncanville as well, who ran 39.2. So you break the national record and you come in second place. I would not be very happy with that. You know, that consolation prize doesn't do me a whole lot of service there. But Caden Durham, the running back from the Duncanville team that won state a year ago, on that track team, as is DeCorian Moore, who Texas is currently pursuing very heavily, also committed to LSU at the moment. Three guys you can add to that LSU future 4x1 with Caden Durham, DeCorian Moore perhaps, and Jelani Watkins, and really get – You find another guy that runs in that 10-4 range, you might be looking at an NCAA record here in a couple of years if you're LSU.
Since we're talking about recruiting, I think it's important in this day and age to mention how important it is for coaches to recruit to the whistle, because finishing second in a recruiting battle now is more valuable than it's ever been. Right. Because you finish second, if he doesn't like his choice, the transfer portal is the next choice, which means they're going to be looking at whoever was the second choice when they were getting recruited. So finishing second and, you know, being put in the friend zone temporarily, hey, it's actually – it used to have no value at all. It's just like, all right, you know what, damn, I finished second behind, you know, Alabama or Texas in recruiting. There's nothing I could gain from it really as a recruiter and as a coach. Now you definitely can, because there's a 50% chance that kid who goes to that school is going to end up transferring. And if they transfer, they're looking immediately to, man, who's my second choice? That's probably the one that got away. So finishing second in the recruiting these days, recruit to the whistle and finish and be happy to finish second. Do it graciously. Right. They probably now coaches have to have a different attitude when they finish second. Like, they got to be happy about it. Like, no, man. Hey, you know what? If you ever need anything, you know what? You need to hit the transfer portal first and then I'll reach out to you. But you know what I mean? That you can actually now, I think, actually have some there is some return on that investment of time, even if you finish second as a recruiter these days.
No question about that. That's a great point.
So back on Matthew Golden.
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go. Example. And I want to talk about that coming up, but Aloha Traveler with the chat says, you guys know anything about the new analyst, Kinodo Hudson? Any thought on that? Anybody got intel? And thank you, Aloha Traveler, for the chat.
I've not done my due diligence there. I was on the road a little bit this afternoon and getting caught up to speed with what's going on in practice right now. So I'll have some news tomorrow morning coming back for it. But at the moment, I don't have any intel on them.
Yep, I'll admit, same thing here. I don't. It's pretty fresh. But in the next 24 to 48 hours, I'll have done research and see if I got any connections that know of the man and how he does business. But so check back in with us. Yeah, we're on every day. I guarantee you, we'll be talking about it tomorrow or the next day.
Yeah, Coffee and Football tomorrow morning. They'll have the latest on the intel there as it's come down this afternoon. Hey, you mentioned Matthew Golden, guys, and then Rod with a great point about, even finishing second in recruiting. But I know listening to Sark on Monday, and you were there, CJ, just the guys he continues to single out as far as thermometers and thermostats and all that whole conversation. You know, Texas was very deliberate in their portal avows, right? They weren't just going to chase anybody. And you're already starting to hear that. You mentioned Matthew Golden and coming in, and we talked about Trey Moore. And, you know, gosh, the Andrew Makuba was a guy that Sark singled out. It just really impressed the way he shows up, does his work. I mean, that pays dividends. I mean, when Rod talks about the traits, right, and the signs and what they're looking for, that's in the portal too. You know, they want production, but they want dudes that fit in. It sounds like so far, much like we saw with A.D. Mitchell last year, the guys that they brought in are guys that fit right in. And actually, some of them are actually leading the way. Andrew Makuba, three-year starter at Clemson, played in big-time defenses, big-time games. He reminds me of the defensive version of A.D. Mitchell, that he's been there, done that, knows how to win at the high level, been in a great program, and he just walks in here kind of setting the tone himself, which I think is great for Sark to bring those kind of players in here.
Yeah, I think Sarkisian learned a little, you know, after his first or second year here at Texas, that if you're going to bring guys in from the portal, you better be, you know, darn sure that they're going to fit with this culture and this locker room. We thought, you know, adding a few pieces from Alabama early in Sarkisian's tenure would have gone a little differently than they did. And as a result, I think it was a good lesson for Sarkisian. You know, if you're going to go out and kind of stir a little bit with what you have in your locker room by adding pieces elsewhere that might, you know, instantly find the field over guys that have been around and on your campus for a while, you better make sure that those guys are good for your locker room and are good team players and leaders in your locker room. Otherwise, you might see some, you know, stirring. And, you know, for lack of better words, you better be careful there. And Rod, I'm sure, you know, the portal wasn't big back in the day, but, you know, if guy would have come in when you had a starting job locked up and said, all right, now I'm here, that probably wouldn't have sat well with you, especially if he came in a little boisterous and looking at it like, I'm the guy now. Y'all are below me. Y'all better be, you know, aware of what's about to happen. If it's a team guy and a good culture fit, it's all for it. And I think that's the progression that we've seen from Sarkisian this year specifically. The seven guys that are on campus right now, I've heard great things about, and they all come from good programs that emphasized winning culture and locker room. Now onto a Texas team right now that was very close to climbing the mountaintop, as we've talked about. And you don't stir with that. You don't mess that up. You can only build to it. And right now, I think Sarkisian's done a good job of getting those pieces on campus that have that same vision in mind as what has already been established with the culture right now in Austin.
Rod, any thoughts on that? Oh, you're muted.
Sorry. Just think, going back to it, I think the players have taken ownership of the culture. So when they come visit and Sark gets a chance to see them interact with the team and they get around the team and they, you know, the guys who are hosting them on their official visits, but they take a lot of unofficial visits, like CJ knows these days too. I think that's really the intel they get back from the team. Actually may be something that is also part of the, you know, the overall evaluation now of some of those players in terms of how they're going to fit with the culture. I think that, because that was happening back when Mac Brown would ask us, hey, all right, so what do you think of him? All right, you've hung out with him for a weekend. You've hung out with the young man. I mean, how much does he love football? How much is he dedicated to it? Is he going to help us win a championship? Is he, you know, does he have that type of DNA, character, mindset? That's also a report I'm sure they're getting about who they're bringing into the program and how they fit. But with the transfer portal guys, Sark has already talked about how it helps to have, you know, background with those guys, like he did with Isaiah Bond and a Matthew Golden. Like he'd already known, you know, the parents of Matthew Golden. He had already done some research on Isaiah Bond and already, you know, kind of known, you know, some of the ties and some of the connections to those guys too. So I think it all comes down to relationships and Sark is really genuine and authentic about those. And I think he wants his culture to be genuine and authentic too.
Well said, guys. All right. So as we're talking Texas football, it's the Tuesday Texas on Texas football, brought to you by Texas Electricity Ratings. Let me ask you this: early reviews on Kenny Baker, CJ. I know if you're out of practice, he is he's one of the loudest guys. I mean, he's out there, man. Bo Davis was more of the stoic guy who would let you have it when you needed to. We talk about defensive line. What are you seeing in your first impressions of Johnny Nansen and Kenny Baker, the two new coaches on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, passionate. That's the best way I could describe Kenny Baker so far. And I got that sense talking to a few commitments or to a few recruitments, prior to him even stepping foot on the field. He kind of had that moxie whenever he would hit the schools early on after being hired by Texas. And recruits basically said, you know what, this guy walked in and he was a very unique approach about how he had came in to meet me. You know, a number of recruits came in and was like, yeah, he had a notepad and a pencil. He wanted to learn about me. He wanted to sit down and understand what my life was like and how I can relate to you. And, of course, how does that make me become a better teacher and coach on the field after? So that's, you know, he's very, advanced with the way that he comes about. You know, he's calculated with the way that he does everything, which I think is an underrated part of his game. And when you see him on the field a little bit, you understand that, you know, he's, you know, very technical with his approach to each individual defensive lineman. He spends the time to correct, technique, drills, whatever it is. He gets it. And I think that's encouraging coming from a place that might not have been on the stage or the scale of the University of Texas. You have to approach that just a little bit differently. And right now he's done a great job. Johnny Nansen is fun to me because he is a great defensive mind. I mean, you look at what Arizona did a year ago with their defense finishing top 15 in the entire country, forcing five turnovers against Oklahoma in the bowl game. He gets it. And to be that guy in the middle of your defense, coaching an Anthony Hill, a David Benda, Leunga LaFau, guys like that, it's going to go a long way with this team. And I think he's seeing eye to eye with Pete Kwiatkowski right now.
Good stuff right there. That is, I wanted to double back, as you mentioned earlier, about the offensive line being where the steel is sharpening the steel, right? Running back room, great culture. I think, CJ, you mentioned the offensive line. And I was thinking about it, when we're looking at this O-line. If you go back to the Oklahoma game last year, you know, the injury to Jake Majors early in that game, I really thought impacted that game because you didn't have Cole Hudson and they had to throw Connor Robertson in the game. And, you know, Oklahoma took advantage of that early. And, that's the kind of stuff when you start taking that next step, right? When you start taking the next step to play for championships, big-time championships, when you listen to Sark talk about the offensive line depth and the competition that's happening there, and you guys write about it and we talk about it, it's pretty impressive that you've got, you know, Jake Majors, Hayden Connors cross-training at center. Here comes Daniel Cruz, the freshman's there. We know that Kelvin Banks is over here, but the right side is going to be a competition for a thing. DJ Campbell coming into his own. It just feels like there's, you know, if you talk to coaches around the country, I know you guys both do, and you, CJ, for sure, you know, offensive line depth is the hardest thing to build. I mean, it's, you know, I feel good about my first five. I feel good about maybe my top seven. But, man, beyond that, we're in trouble. It feels like Texas is getting to a place where you got a real two deep, and the guys behind them are actually pushing the Trevor Goosebys and the Brandon Bakers and these guys, the Cam Williams. They want these jobs. Now, that's a good thing. It does sound like, to me, the offensive line is becoming what Rod talked about with the defensive backfield back when he was at Texas.
Yeah, you can go two deep and probably even three deep with some of the pieces that Texas has on their roster at the moment. When you have a five-star in Brandon Baker getting third-team reps at the moment, you're doing something right with that line, offensive line room. You talked about center and where things are there. Walt on Monday, whenever we were there for the media availability time, it was Hayden Connor getting the second team reps at center. And so there's a little bit of a switch up. And when you have that depth and when you have that wealth of talent, you can do that. You know, it's no longer if one guy goes down, you know, what do we do? You know, there's all sorts of plans in place right now for any of the guys if they go down with an injury. Texas now has the depth and the talent to just seamlessly fill in. And that's something I don't think anybody would have expected to happen this quickly at the time whenever Sarkisian took over the job, and there are only 9 offensive linemen on scholarship to be what it is at now is you know, it's a complete 180. And you look at each position, you can go 2 or 3 deep and feel very comfortable with who you're putting on the field, especially going into the SEC where, you know, you need that offensive line depth and talent more so than anywhere else on the field.
Yeah, and they haven't had a lot of guys transfer. You start stockpiling talent at any position, elite talent like that, you know, even the quarterback room. You look at the, you know, the Texans has lost a lot of wide receivers after bringing in upgrades at wide receiver, churning out the talent at roster. They haven't lost a lot of guys. Now, shout out to the Pancake Factory. They may have a lot to do with that, but they have not lost a lot of talent in that room, which has allowed them to stockpile. And ultimately, what you want to do in terms of offensive line development, you would like to have those guys have a, you know, a year in offseason in a strength and conditioning program with your nutritionist, the dietitian in the weight room, building up their technique and foundation, their fundamentals, so they don't learn bad technique, so they mature into their grown man bodies, so those teenage bodies. And now Texas has the ability to do that. Now, Kevin Banks is a prodigy playing right away, but now you have elite NFL caliber guys. You're going to be able to allow to sit and actually develop and not have to rush them into play. That is a luxury that I don't think a lot of teams, damn near no teams in college football have. So shout out to Kyle Flood, shout out to the Pancake Factory. But they're building something special on that O-line right now, man. It hasn't been this stacked since mid-2000s. That's the last time Texas O-line had this much talent stockpiled.
Yeah. Well, and the last, you know, 3-4 years, you've seen Georgia and Michigan bully their way to national championships. You know, I mean, that's really what it's about. And Michigan had a situation where they have a quarterback that may go in the top 5 of the draft, whether we agree with that or not, that didn't even have to do much, right? He just handed it off and powered and had a number 1 defense. I mean, that's a pretty simple recipe. Just don't hurt us. Just don't turn the ball over. We're going to be okay and throw when we need to. That's where Texas feels like they're heading. And I would also say the biggest question mark we all have for Texas is the interior D-line. Having this much talent up front, Rod, well, you'll know by the end of spring if you need more, right? You'll know where the steel sharpening steel, you'll know.
Great point.
You know, how these guys, the Sadir Mitchells and the Alfred Collins, Vernon Broughton, you know, Tia Savea, do we have enough or do we need more?
I totally agree that you have so much depth now on that O-line. When you get a chance, as CJ mentioned, even with those third teams, Sark talks about how now they're running pretty much circuits. They got, you know, teams, they got 3 or 4 different groups working against one another, so everybody on the team can get reps. You start breaking down that film, that practice film, you're right, they'll know. They'll know early on, actually. They probably already got a pretty good idea if it's going to be a dire situation at the interior D-line or if it's actually going to exceed the expectations and it's actually going to surprise some people pleasantly. But they, like I said, they'll have a really good idea because that O-line, that run blocking, I think, is the O-line strength. I mean, it's going to be a strength period, but the run blockers they have, or they got some road graders. DJ Campbell has the ability to be one of those guys. Just a road grader. I mean, Kevin Banks is elite across the board. But Cam Williams, you know, Christian Jones was a really good offensive lineman. He's going to play on Sunday. He's going to get drafted. But Cam Williams is a much better run blocker than a Christian Jones because he's just a massive human being at 360-some pounds. So Texas is going to be able to lean on people and, yes, play bully ball. And I think that if they can do that against Texas, I think that's going to be the weakness of the Texas defense is teams that run power up against them, teams that can play bully ball against them because they can, you know, your linebacker play, one of the question marks, right, is that off-ball linebacker. Anthony Hill's not an elite run defender. You lost the guts of that defense, Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat. So teams going to run power right at you. Georgia can do it. Michigan can do it. Kentucky can do it. And Texas, they going to be able to do it ideally. But if they can't in spring, then Sark will know, all right, you know what? Our interior, the central nervous system of our defense won't be as bad as I thought, at least in the front seven. But I'm with you. I think that'll be a great way to test early on if they need to go out and get reinforcements in the transfer portal.
Yeah, I mean, we remember, CJ, the years when Tom Herman thought his offensive line was really good because the D-line was so bad. You know, it's like you got to the season, you're like, oh, man.
Yeah.
I just read both of those things pretty badly. We weren't good at either, for crying out loud. All right, guys. Good stuff on the On Texas Football Tuesday live stream brought to you by Texas Electricity Ratings. Let me tell you about them one more time. Listen, if you live in Texas and certainly in a deregulated area of the great state, Dallas and Houston jump to mind, but many others, and you need electricity, and you understand that the deregulated market, it can be very, very confusing for your electricity bills. Texas Electricity Rating is your shopping website of choice. It's got to be your go-to. They let you compare prices, read customer reviews, find the electricity that fits your needs and your family and what you have to have. It also filters out a lot of gimmicky plans that you're going to not want to mess with. There are websites like Power to Choose that then tend to trick customers into more expensive bills. So if you're in the market for a new electricity plan, shop our great friends at TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF. That's On Texas Football. Make sure you throw that in there and a shout out, because they are great sponsors of a lot of the programming here on the channel. And it's certainly our Tuesday live stream every single night. Shop TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF for all of your electricity needs here in the great state in the deregulated areas. That's TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF. Guys, any parting thoughts as we move forward into the week? We'll have coffee and football tomorrow morning. Rod, I know you'll be over there on the horn and doing your great stuff and back here in the afternoon. Any parting thoughts as we move forward?
Hey, it's just exciting to see this team again, you know, kind of take that next step on the field again. Hey, I wanted to mention the offensive line again just one more time, because – you know, the next step for Quinn Ewers is understanding what it's like to get away from the pocket, you know, and understanding when pressure is coming in. With this offensive line, yeah, you're going to be tested a little bit with this these edges, but that offensive line is going to be special. And I'm thinking one more time, you know, for the spring, you're going to want to see Quinn Ewers kind of see pressure a little bit, kind of get an understanding of what pressure is like in live situations, just as often as you can without getting hit. But with this offensive line, I question how often he'll actually see that. So the next time that we have media availability, I'll be looking at, you know, is there a chance Quinn Ewers is more mobile in the pocket? Can he evade? Can he rush? Whatever it is, I'll be keeping my eye on that.
Hey, Rod, is it fair to say moving forward 3 weeks out now, the spring game's going to be pretty damn competitive as we're having all these conversations? I mean, you don't want anybody hurt, but you may see some you know, ones versus twos, maybe a pretty fun concept, conversation and watch on April 20.
Yeah, because what we're talking about here is, right, they're going to be rotating a lot of guys defensively. We talked about the edge position. You got four guys there, have four or five guys potentially that are going to give you starting caliber reps. We talked about in the secondary, Sark said, they're cross-training guys. So I can't wait to see if they actually do use some of those guys in different positions in the spring game. You talk about that cross training cornerbacks at safety, nickels at corner, you know, safeties at nickel. I love that, by the way. And I would love to see that too, if that's actually happening. So that's something I'll be looking for in the spring game, but you got a rotation of guys. So what combination are you going to see in the secondary with all those guys? Same thing with the wide receiver position, right? That's one. So your second team wide receivers going up against your second team DBs, hell, man, that's going to be entertaining. This is going to be really entertaining, because you're talking about potentially, I don't know, Matthew Golden and Ryan Wingo in the second team wide receivers going up against, I'm trying to think of the second team cornerbacks they'll have out there. I guess maybe a Gavin Holmes and Young Buck, Young Kobe Black or something. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like
Austin Jordan, yeah.
Yeah, Austin Jordan. So I think ultimately, you know, it is going to be really entertaining, because Sark has got the stockpile of talent now at those positions, and you're going to see some really good kind of face-off competitions in key spots, like the edges against, you know, Brandon Baker going up against a Colin Simmons. That should be fun. You know what I mean? Those kind of one-on-one battles with elite talent that Sark has brought in at key spots. So, yeah, man, I'm excited. How can you not be giddy if you're a Longhorn fan? You got first world problems everywhere on that roster. You don't have one third world issue. Not one.
And the place, the place will go crazy to see the backup quarterback try to shred that one defense. That's going to be good too. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's a beautiful time, man, to be a Longhorn football fan.
Yeah. True. All right, guys. Great stuff. I know you guys are beating the streets hard and getting after it. Appreciate y'all tonight. Appreciate everybody that tuned in while we're watching this Texas baseball game. Horn's got to rally a little bit here against the Islanders. So we'll check that out. Coffee and football tomorrow morning at 8 with the crew. And, guys, it's been fun.
Yes, sir. Have a good one, y'all.
Have a great night. Welcome. Thank you, Texas Electricity Ratings. Thank you, Matthew. Thank you, Rod. Thank you, CJ.